All right, let me start like this. You are the first guest that I have on this podcast that AI has something to say about. So yesterday I tapped into OpenAI.
Wow.
Who is Mattis Landwehr?
Really?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you what AI tells about you, because it's nice for the listeners also. Yeah. Even though you're like a bit of a celebrity.
No, yeah.
A little bit. I've understood. Yeah. I understood after we got to know each other.
Yeah.
So buckle up. This is what AI says about you. Mattis Landwehr is a German actor, stuntman, and martial artist.
Nice.
You're born in Munich, 1981.
In Stuttgart.
In Stuttgart. Yeah. See, AI is not perfect.
Yeah,
it's not perfect.
But it's South Germany.
Yeah.
So it's kind of right.
Yeah, relatively good. And as a child, you began training martial arts, specializing in taekwondo, kickboxing, and Krav Maga.
Yeah, Krav Maga, not so much.
Not so much.
Taekwondo and kickboxing and Vietnamese martial arts, yeah.
There you go. I love it that it's AI, because then I can always blame it on AI if my intro is not good. And what it claims is that your career took off when you collaborated with a stunt coordinator and fight choreographer, Mike Müller.
Man, that's funny.
Is that true? Kind of.
I mean, we started doing like independent short films when I was 14 even.
Mm-hmm.
They were like really, really, I mean, it was like, just trying
a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. We tried to imitate all the Hong Kong movies. And
with Mike?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. And I started working with Mike when I was 20, I think. And because we did like a 20 minutes martial arts short movie that was, and we kind of sent it to how you call this, like film festivals, and one of it picked it up, and we got the audience prize for it. And after that, we did a long film, like a feature film, and then we kind of looked around Germany if there's anybody else doing martial arts films, because this genre is not big in Germany.
No.
And then we met Mike, and he's actually, he started even before me. But that was when we worked together and we did this feature film. That was my first film where I kind of got into the business. So it's kind of right. Yeah.
What's the name of that first film that you did?
Kampfansage.
Kampfansage.
Or Challenge in English. It was actually being distributed in the whole world, like 150 countries.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must have felt quite cool.
Yeah, it was exciting. Definitely.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's to be honest, I think it's everywhere like this. When you go into the business and you kind of get to know it, it's not that glory that it's that it feels when you only look from the outside.
Reality is everywhere.
Exactly.
Reality is everywhere.
Exactly.
So, and you were 20 when you had this first success.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's interesting, because like, when people ask me what's this podcast about, this is going to be the seventh episode that I record.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called The Next Episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the next episode in the sense that maybe I took a view of myself, that I had a time in my life when I was very focused on the classic career, money making was the main thing. And now I experience that I myself am in the next episode where I want to focus on other things and want to be more creative, and this podcast is one expression of that. But when I think about you, it seems like you went to your next episode straight away. You haven't really like sat in an office with a suit and tie on and tried to make some numbers add up on the screen. Is that right?
Yeah, true. True. I kind of I followed my dream like right away, but I also had to struggle a lot, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like up and down.
Yeah.
But I kind of, when I started like thinking about making movies and martial arts movies, I mean, all my friends and my family said, "You're nuts." I mean,
really?
You're in Germany and you're trying to do kung fu movies.
But you come from a very creative home.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's true. And my
do you want to tell about your parents?
Yeah, my parents. My mother is a production designer. I think it's in English, scenograph.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked. She as long as I can think, she was working in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And my father is a teacher and a doctor of philosophy, and he also wrote like pieces for theater, or like theater pieces.
He's a doctor in philosophy.
Yeah.
Dude, like, how come we didn't? You know that my dad is a professor in philosophy.
Yes, but did you mention it? I think, yeah, that. True.
I'm sad. Maybe that's why we vibe so nicely. Yeah.
That's
okay.
True. Yeah. Uh-huh. That could be a reason, definitely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So this was so they kind of took me with them to go to theater, and I also. When I was, I think, 12, I was involved in a few pieces as an actor, but it was always small roles after school. I went there, and it was fun, but because my parents did it, it was like I needed something else, and this was martial arts.
Yeah, you needed to do your own, put your own mark on it.
Exactly. Mm. And my parents were not so much, I had to convince them that I really want to do martial arts, because for them it was more about violence.
Yes.
You know, because when you don't know about it, it's, and nowadays you easily get the impression that it's only about beating people up, right?
You're right.
And but it's not. I found a master, and he always said like the physical side and the fighting is just, it's not the priority. The priority of martial arts is becoming a better person and develop your character as a human being.
Mm.
And I started doing that, and I was so involved in it, and I was only doing this. Like, after school, I went to my master and I was training. And then I kind of developed this dream, because I saw, like, Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee,
right,
Donnie Yen, and all Jet Li, and all these characters. And they were, for me, they were like, role models.
Right.
And I wanted to combine this in a way, like this theater thing. Yeah. That I liked it, but as I said, it was too close to my parents, and after that the martial arts, and so I said I want to do these films.
You did a remix kind of.
Yeah exactly.
Interesting. Where are you right now, like, what you're currently, you're an actor in various movies, that's your main, that's your main thing
right now. It's still my main thing, but I also I always train martial arts, so I always teach, which is also a big thing for me and a very important thing. And I also founded a production company to produce films and series. But it's always the martial arts is always this red line that is going through everything in a way.
I find martial arts can be so different, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it can be an Asian touch with katas, and but it could also be boxing, or
totally
can be MMA, and
totally
it's all around the globe.
Yeah, totally. I think
it sounds like you're on the Asian side in the beginning.
Exactly. My first contact with martial arts was through a Vietnamese master, and he was he had these both sides, which I think is really important, because everybody, this is not, I don't know if I'm right, but for me it was always a big difference between combat sports like boxing, kickboxing, MMA, that I really enjoy and also still train, and martial arts, which is kind of a expression, and it has two sides. It has the external and the internal side.
Yeah.
And the older I get, the more important the internal side gets for me. And I started,
it's almost a spiritual thing, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Right? For it's me, like a meditative thing, if you do these totally. Movement patterns, and it's a
totally
life philosophy, it could be...
Yeah, totally.
That's probably lost on many people that are not deep into the world.
Exactly. That's what I think is missing a little bit when you watch all the MMA cage fighting stuff.
Mm.
Because all the kids, they really love it. And I mean, I have so much respect for these athletes, really, what they do. I think the only thing that is missing is that when you train with kids, that you tell them it's more about how you treat people, how you respect people, and it's not about only about winning, because then it's a sport, and there's nothing bad with sports. It's just when you compare it to martial arts, this other side, this internal side, is missing, and I think it's super important. I started like meditating 15 years ago, and it's a big part of my life. It's very important for me, and I think it fits perfectly with the martial arts. It's like, I think the Western approach to that is only this. You compare yourself with others. You want to be better. You want to be faster, and so on. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just when you get older, I think it's after a while, it's not the. It doesn't fulfill you anymore to only try to be better.
No.
Jump higher, kick faster. You know what I mean?
There's also a certain expiration date for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Personally. We're both in our 40s, so we can't be the fastest anymore.
Exactly.
But how would you describe that spiritual part of martial art to someone? Like, what is that? How can we put it into words? The life philosophy, or
I'd say it's martial arts. Like when you train martial arts, it's a good way. I mean, you can do different art forms, and have a spiritual approach to it. But in martial arts, I think it's a very good way to kind of look to your inside. When, for example, when you do sparring, when you kind of or when you doing competitions or sparring, you fight another person, and you easily see your own patterns. When you get hit, you see if you get emotionally, if your ego is telling you, I got hit, so no, I have to hit him harder.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so this is a very good way how you can kind of get to know yourself.
Yeah.
And then change your patterns, because it doesn't make sense. As soon as you get emotional, you will lose. I mean,
that's a super good point. Because I think when people that are not familiar with this world, when they see a fight happening or they think of a fight, they probably associate rage with it. And of course, you can feel rage, but you're at a great disadvantage if you act out of rage and you let your emotions run wild inside of you.
This is what the pro fighters, they do it a lot. I mean, they try to get into the heads of the other one and try to get them emotional.
Yeah.
And as soon as they lose.
It's nicely put. Like, it's a way to get to know yourself in a different way. You have to face your fears. You have to be like okay with being uncomfortable.
Exactly.
You have to keep your emotions under control.
Exactly.
And I think also you're then less afraid if you know, like, okay, I know how to defend myself.
Exactly.
I think a person that is not afraid is a better person.
Yeah.
It's difficult to be gracious and generous and so if you're afraid of.
Definitely.
Of others.
Yeah, very well put.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, of course, it's it combines a lot of very good features, I think. It's coordination. You need speed, you need strength, stretch. And I mean, you can always, you know, it's like a...
It's complex. Yeah, it's kind complex. Of like, yeah. It offers an answer to how do you live a good life.
Yeah.
For me, I would put a good life entails a lot of physical movement. Mm-hmm. You need to move to feel good. Yeah, so that's part of it.
Yeah.
You should stretch as well to feel good.
Exactly.
You should have a routine to feel good.
Yeah.
So
exactly. And I like it's like that you kind of you practice with other people. It's a contact sport, and if you practice with the people that you like, for example, if we would practice, it would be like a, you know, it's like a exchange, and you and if there is no ego involved, and
yes.
you just wanna exchange
cool.
and having fun, you can. I don't fight anymore. Huh? I don't even in training, sparring. I'm only doing play sparring.
Yeah,
which is still you can you touch the other one and you it's kind of a good hand eye coordination.
I haven't done that in a long time. I would love to do that.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
You know,
just play around.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, but you also did martial arts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I did taekwondo, boxing, a bit of Krav Maga, but like where I put the most, I went deepest was taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my journey, like there is still something to it that, you know, the violent side. Or so I think when you're drawn to it, when I was drawn to it, I kind of wanted to know how to, or I wanted to be able to beat other people up.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
There is that side as a young
definitely
boy, you know.
And like, it's okay too.
It's okay.
When you're young, it's normal, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and for a while I went deep into it. I trained five times a week, and what I found was very good for me was also to partake in competitions. Mm-hmm. It's a very special feeling when you go up on the mat, or
definitely.
To know that I'm preparing for a fight, and like as you walk up and you face your opponent, it's that's quite intense.
Definitely.
That feeling,
yeah.
The first
special.
Times you do it, or I guess always, it's always intense to go up. And for me, as soon as the fight started, then like the nerves calm down, and you were like totally in the zone.
There
was
exactly.
only focus on the opponent. It's like you don't hear anything from the outside hardly, and
exactly
in deep in it. Yes, yes, and. And then another benefit of like with this martial arts thing is that you mentioned you had a master. I would also enjoyed a lot to have a tight contact with my, I never called him master, but like my trainer. I really longed for a strong male role model, and there he was, you know, like. Since I didn't have like. An easy relationship with my dad, then it was for a while it was then nice to have a tight relationship with the trainer.
With the trainer, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny that you said, because my father too, I actually had a good or have a good relationship to him, but he was never, he is a pacifist, like 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So he would never think of fighting. And this was like the young side in my life was missing a little bit. That's why I think that could also be a reason why I searched for something like martial arts.
So how was it when you went to school? Who were you? I assume that's where you got the idea from, that maybe it's good to know how to defend yourself or so.
Yeah. Yeah, true. That's. I mean, I was always actually lucky that I wasn't being bullied.
Mm.
But still, sometimes I remember when I was like between maybe 7, 8 and 14 years old.
Yeah.
I very often felt insecure.
Yeah,
I didn't know what happened if there's going to be a situation in which I have to fight, and so this was definitely also a reason why I picked that. And my father was never like someone who said, okay, you have to, if they come after you, you just have to fight them.
My mom told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a very, very scared child. Very easily fooled. I think I practically grew up, like, I have a sister, but she's 13 years older than me. So I'm almost like a single child.
Yeah.
And I wasn't used to like people playing dirty tricks or lying and so on. Yeah. So I was very easily scared and being told stories. And there was one time at the playground where a girl like challenged me and said that she'd eaten a lot of grapes. So she's very strong. She can kick my ass and she wants to take my toy. And then I ran home with that toy in hand and rang the bell like, mama, this girl wants to meet me up. And she came out on the balcony and she's like, what? This girl? Come on, get out of here. Like, went back in. And really? I was like, shit, yes. And then when I asked her, like, come on, how could you abandon me there? I was like, come on, get a hold of yourself. And you know, sometimes you just gotta punch someone with all your force in the face. Yeah. That's how I did it as a girl. There were some boys teasing me, and then one day I punched them, and then all the problems were solved. So that was kind of a Czech mom suggestion to problem solution. So I really took that with me. And then that was my model. And I perceived sometimes in school that there are times when I must fight. I have to punch them. Otherwise, it's...
They don't respect you.
They don't respect you. It can be... There was a bit similar vibe, maybe like in a prison, you know? When someone challenges you and you don't step up, then, you know, you're going to be pushed around all the time. So I
definitely
had these times when I saw it as the only way out. Yeah, I'm sure that there's clever ways to
to solve. I totally agree. Is it okay with the music?
Oh, sorry. No, let's move.
We change, yeah,
let's move a little bit. So we are in Mauer Park. That's why we have noise coming. It's a area in Berlin. How would you describe Mauer Park?
I mean, it was the former line that divided
between east and west.
Eastern and western.
So it was a no man's land here before. Well,
I mean, there was, if you were here, you got shot like right away.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the death zone.
Death zone. We're sitting in the death zone. Or walking in the death zone.
But now it's different, huh?
Now it's different. It's a very vibrant place. In the weekends, there's a lot of people performing. There's a karaoke. There's like an amphitheater over there.
And basketball place. That's
nice. It's super nice.
Cool. Yeah, so I think your mother was... I agree totally. This is... It's no... You can never be like... how should I put it? It's always when you say something in life is 100% like that, it's wrong. It doesn't work. If you say you can never fight in your life,
that's not right.
It's not right. And when you say you always have to fight in your life, that's not right too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot is avoidable.
Yeah,
by talking.
But sometimes not.
Sometimes not. Quite rarely, luckily, in my life, at least.
Yeah, true.
It's been a very long time.
Yeah, for me
ago.
Too.
So, like when I said that, you went directly into your next episode, kind of. You said there were still times that were really difficult and not easy. Do you want to share about the most challenging? What were your most challenging times?
Actually, you know what? I think... of course, it was very, in the beginning, it was very hard to actually keep on doing what I do because so many people told me it's not working. But as soon as I made money with it.
How long did that take until you made money with it?
After that feature film that we were talking about, Kampfansage or Challenge, I got like... my first film that was being paid, like I was 23, I think. So
from 14 till 23.
Yeah.
But then as a 14-year-old, you don't feel the pressure to make money.
Exactly.
So it was maybe like from 18.
Yeah. After high school, when I did like civil service.
Yeah.
And then most of my friends started to study.
And you just and said, I'm going to do acting on martial arts and I'm going to do films.
And I was traveling throughout Asia, Southeast Asia mainly.
Yeah.
And we're practicing different martial arts styles. I went to the villages and asked if there is a martial arts school, and I went there. And
that's super cool.
Yeah.
Did you travel alone or a friend?
Both. I came there with a friend, but I stayed longer.
Mm.
So... and then I met another friend, so it was both. And it was one time I had to come back to earn more money, and it was like 1.5 years, I think, after high school that I was in Asia. And then I kept on doing films. And
what did you do for money when you had to come back?
I worked in at the Daimler Benz, you know, in Stuttgart. There's a lot of, and I did. On the assembly line.
Yeah.
Back then you could make a lot of money.
Really?
Without having any experience or something. You just had to do actually stupid work, but in the nighttime, and it was hard work, but it was good money back then.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
So I did that, and then, as soon as I...
go to the sun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's fine. A little bit of background noise. Yeah. I don't think it picks it up.
Yeah. As soon as I did my first film and earned money with it, it was okay for my surrounding, for my family. But you asked me, the hard times for me were actually when I was like 27. I got like a martial arts series, like as a lead, which was a great success for me and something that I always wanted to do in my life.
Yeah.
So I did. We shot 2 seasons, and after that, I kind of realized that I reached a point that I always wanted to reach.
Yeah.
And I was not happier.
Oh, so that was a heavy time.
Was actually the most, because of course there were other times where I thought, man, I could, I would like to shoot that or this, or I had like a year where I didn't work or something. But that was always okay because I had martial arts. I always had something to do and something where I want to get better. And but for me, the hardest time was actually when I realized that what I'm doing is not. When I reach it, it's not fulfilling me.
We talked about it when we hung out before. Mm-hmm. About it reminds me of, and I've brought it up in another interview also. I find it's an interesting lesson about Tyson Fury and his journey. And when he became the champion, that he almost immediately became depressed because he reached that goal that had given him meaning and routine for such a long time.
Exactly.
And then it was like, it's still, I'm still in the same reality. I haven't reached nirvana, you know?
Right? Exactly.
And he became an alcoholic and abused drugs and heavily overweight and super depressed, suicidal even.
Wow, imagine. And he has kind of, when you look from the outside, everything.
Yeah.
Like he has money, he has fame. Everybody says he's one of the greatest boxers in the world. But for yourself, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Necessary change.
So how did you get out of that slump, and how long were you there in that hole?
I realized that actually, because the thing was, it was also when I was when I made like martial arts movies and martial arts became a job. I stopped training for myself, and this was really bad. I only trained for I did all the stunt rehearsals and the fight rehearsals, and we were shooting this stuff, but it was not, I only did it for the filming and not for myself anymore.
Yeah.
So I kind of stopped practicing and exercising as I did before, and I realized that this is really important for me. So I picked it up again. Like I said, I'm gonna train no matter what happens in my life. I just keep on training, keep on meditating, and this kind of helped me a lot to go through these
times. How's the training different when you train for yourself versus when you train for movie? What's the difference?
For example, for movies, you have to look good. You have to actually, definitely have, you have to be in really good shape.
Like good shape defined as like buffed muscles, you have to lift
like
weights.
The best, I mean, you don't have to, but they can. Yeah.
It's good if you have a six pack. Yeah. Nobody's going to be angry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Plus you're doing, you're doing more choreography. It's totally different from when you train. Like martial arts is a lot of about details and stuff, and choreography is more, you have to show off. You have to show.
It's almost like a dance.
Yeah, exactly. And it's beautiful. I love it, but it's not, It's different when you practicing, for example, one punch. You practice it like a million times, and you can still work on it. And for a film, it doesn't matter. You kind of when you make the punch look good, it's enough. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, and I'm thinking of. I'm gonna try to sum it up. Isn't it that one can say that you? Certain things you do because you love doing them. Other things you do because you want a certain outcome.
Exactly. Exactly. It's exactly. Yeah, I think you can.
That's also where like the money aspect comes in. That like money really draws us to do things because you get money for it. Like not because you like doing it or because it's an honorable or right thing to do or because it's fun or because you like the people that you have with you on your journey. If you go too deep, then it's only about getting some numbers in that account.
Exactly. And then you kind of lose the spirit of it.
Absolutely. It's like I think a lot of people like forget that spirit even exists. It's part of like... When you're a child, then you're only in that kind of spirit.
Exactly.
And then sometime, I guess, late teens, you lose it. And, people lose it.
Yeah, and I think nowadays it's even harder not to lose it because you have all the social media and you see everyone showing off and showing what they have. And you think...
Yeah, maybe that introduces a new factor, that you do things... Like not for money, but in order to get a nice shot on Instagram, not to have a good time.
True.
Mm.
And it's funny because I think the more I get rid of this, and the more I just even if I just train by myself and I don't film myself and I just train to honor the spirit of martial arts.
Yeah.
It's after this kind of training, I feel best.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Because when you train and you always think, okay, as you said, like I need a good Insta story. I need to show what I did today and stuff. And you kind of, it's empty then.
Help me understand your this celebrity thing that we talked about. Like how I have zero feeling for German celebrities. How much of a celebrity are you?
The thing is, what I'm doing, it's still like a genre that it's not very famous. So I'm, for a certain group of people, they know me definitely because I'm the only one in Germany. Or now that's coming, there's more films being produced slowly, but I'm like one of the very few people that are doing this in Germany. So it's not hard to kind of know me if you like this genre. But you have, I mean, in Germany, there is no star system, which I personally enjoy.
Yeah.
But there is no stars in Germany. It's not like the Americans, they celebrate it so hard. I mean, there's a certain lifestyle, right? They show what they have and it's,
there's a city for that. Different.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's not a city for that in Germany, I think.
No, not at all.
Maybe and Cologne was a very light,
a little bit,
for a while.
But not really. So it's
How often does someone recognize you when you walk out on the street?
Super randomly.
Okay.
Super randomly. I mean, when I had the series, it was extreme because they played the trailers on hard rotation on
yeah.
like a big channel, but that, it's just about half a year or something, and then it's gone because
yeah.
it doesn't stick to the people's
okay.
head.
So but then people could come up to you. Like,
yeah,
hey.
Back then it was a lot, and it was not nice, to be honest.
No.
I don't like it at all. And
no.
that was also a point where I thought, okay, now I experienced like a little bit of this
yeah,
fame,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and I know for myself, this is not the reason why I'm doing it, because it's not nice.
It gets annoying super fast. I have luckily only a very, very small experience of that. It was when I was on the airport in India, mm-hmm. and it's like a rumor spread on the airport that mm-hmm. me and my business partner were some form of celebrities. It must be some misunderstanding. So everybody wanted to take pictures of us, like from the check-in lady to the flight crew and the cleaning people. And I went quickly to the point where I had to be like, okay, people, this is the last selfie. Like, then we have to go. I told him, like, that gets old really fast.
And imagine, this is your life. Imagine you're like an A-level American star and you cannot go out because everybody is coming to you. I mean, this is...
It's like a drug. I think some people love it.
In the beginning, maybe, but I think after a while, imagine you have this like a few years. I mean, for example, I was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, he's one of the fight choreographers for Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
And he called me to come to London because they were shooting a Jackie Chan movie. And this guy, I mean, Jackie Chan, he's been a star for 50 years.
Mm.
So he kind of copes with it, but he has, as a person, he has to be a really, I don't know how to explain it, but it's,
you see, he's very private.
He's private and he's not as nice as you think he
no.
is.
No, I didn't hear that he's a very nice dude.
Yeah.
Or like that he doesn't want to hang out with people at all.
On his team, yeah, but I kind of understand, because if everybody wants to be with you and make a picture with you or talk
that's
to you,
annoying.
Always you have to kind of change your personality, right? To to cope with it, because otherwise it's not something that I think nobody really enjoys it longer than half a year or a year. I cannot imagine that, because it's not, you're not free anymore. You know, it's not.
But if you're like a Donald Trump, then I think it's very important.
Yeah. Maybe.
Imagine if nobody would recognize him. I think he'd be crushed.
Yeah, true. True. That's true.
He'd be really depressed.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, but most of the people, I think, have a wrong expression, a wrong picture of what it means to be a really famous person. I think everybody wants to have fame and money. It's the same with money. I mean, when you're a billionaire, it's not only easy, right? Don't you think it's a hard thing?
I perceive that people get trapped by it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That you think, aha. Uh-huh. And especially, one thing I'm happy about is that I don't come from a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. Because that, I think, can be like a trap in terms of expectations that now you need to also go on this path and you need to make a certain kind of money. It's really a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like to be like a old school classic rich person. Mm-hmm. It's very, there's like a manual. This is what you do. This is how you dress. These are the jobs that you have.
That,
these are the schools that you go to. This is where you travel.
Wow. It's like this, right?
Yeah, I got to know people like that in my...
Wow.
In my studies, and I perceived that, like, wow, how they are, like, they don't have so many, they don't have a choice, right?
Wow. Yeah.
And they probably don't know the options.
But that's super cool that you kind of work by yourself and make, like, money by yourself, and you know both sides, and now we're sitting on the ground in a park, and you don't have a problem with this. And I think if you come
really
from
like
a really rich family and everything, you were always like you always, even your parents told you that you were something like in a different level than other people, and you cannot do this and that. As you said, I think it's
I really, really enjoy that level of freedom. I got I got a lot of freedom. From my parents.
That's good.
No expectations.
Yeah.
I can do whatever I want. I can do whatever I want now. Do you have, like, I hope, like, for the listeners of this podcast, for every show, I hope that someone will be inspired to break free from whatever their patterns there are. Mm-hmm. And you've been very good at going there directly. What would you, what kind of advice would you give to someone that sits there stuck in the cubicle and they want to...
To break free?
Yeah. How to do that?
I think one of the most important things for me, actually, this is the base, and I should have, now in the retrospective, I would say, I would even start earlier to meditate, to be honest. This is one of my, and I don't mean to have like a, to be like a strict, or to, I don't mean like having a strict day and like be a spiritual person or religious person. Not at all. I just think that it's so important to get to know your own think processes and your own patterns, because as soon as you know them, and this pattern is also like, I have to break free, I need to do something else or something. Sometimes, because as I said earlier, sometimes it's not the thing that you think, I have to do this to be free, I have to do this to be fulfilled. And as soon as you're there, you realize, no, it's not. It was not the thing that I have to do, or the money that I have to earn, or the woman I have to be with. It's more about my way of thinking. Because when
you become aware.
Exactly, you become aware of what's of yourself. You're not, and I think meditation is the only way. I mean, some people, they can do it without meditation, and meditation doesn't mean to sit like properly to do a certain routine or something. Meditation can also be just sit in stillness on your before you start your day, or when for some people it's better in the evening, it doesn't matter, but you just sit yourself and you start with 2 minutes and you just do nothing, you just observe yourself, and after that I'm sure there will be a lot of answers to questions. Is it still okay with the wind?
I think the wind catchers are good enough. Yeah. Maybe I'm going to sit a little bit like that.
Yeah. So, and after that, I think you can. You will, or when you start doing that, I think there's a lot of. It becomes much clearer what you really want, and then on a relative in the relative world, of course, I would tell anyone to try to or to do what they kind of want to do, but without the expectation that this is freeing them, without the expectation that when they reach this, then everything is going to be fine. You know what I mean?
Totally. It's a very interesting answer. You should meditate in order to, like, free yourself or, like, find out a bit closer what you're supposed to do.
Exactly, and get like, the distance to your own thoughts.
Get the distance. I'm thinking of my journey in meditation. I haven't meditated quite as long as you. I started meditating 7 years ago, more regularly. And I remember... how it was in the beginning. I knew almost nothing. What is meditation? I thought in the beginning it's about I'm going to be relaxed if I meditate. So I tried to lie down and be as relaxed as possible. But it's not about that. No. And it's not even about feeling pleasant feelings no, all the time.
Not at all.
Because many people give the objection, I don't like meditation, I get so blur, and it's stressy or unpleasant to sit down, I have so many thoughts in my head. I would say that's what it's about. It's like viewing your own mind as a spectator. If you don't view your own mind, then you run the risk of thinking that everything that the mind tells you to feel, that it's absolutely real, that you don't have a defense against it. Your mind is like a wild animal. And by meditating, you domesticate it a little bit. Or like you get the, you said, you get the distance. It's like in Matrix, you know, you can like, like, you know, the bullets are flying, the bullets are like angry thoughts or whatever, and you can be like,
just let them through.
Do I have to, do I have to engage with them? You have, if you have a good practice, you will find you have an option.
Exactly.
I don't need to be taken like on a ride by my mind.
Exactly.
A lot of people are taken on a ride.
I would say
by their
everyone. And the thing is, the magic about it is that you kind of realize that when you don't hold on to this emotion, it just goes away.
Yeah.
It's, and it's much easier than to hold on. To hold on to anger is so exhausting.
Yeah.
Or to fear or to bad feelings. It's very exhausting because you have to kind of rebuild this energy all the time. And when you have the possibility to step back, you just let it go because everything goes. This is another really important thing for me that I kind of realize more and more. It sounds kind of generic, but it really has to sink in that everything is just there. Everything that is appearing will disappear.
Everything is temporary.
Exactly. Everything. Like, there's nothing, not our mind, not our bodies, not our fame, not our money.
Not all fear,
everything will pass. Everything, and it kind of, and it happens all the time. It happens in every moment. It's like on the edge of a waterfall.
Yes.
And you know, we're just on the edge all the time. And if you realize that, it's a huge freedom. Because everything that appears, you can just let it go. And if even, and as you said, what you said before, I think this is very important because there's a lot of misunderstandings about meditation. Many people think you have to be like a monk or something. And you always have to smile and everything is good. No, it's more about realizing what is really happening all the time. Because we're kind of asleep, what you said. When we always think we are in our thoughts, we're contained. We're like in a prison. We can and we don't there's no way how to get out if you don't have the ability to step back and to just let it disappear, because it goes. Every thought and every emotion will go.
I heard someone say, you know, the difference between us and a crazy person rambling shit on the street is that we just keep quiet. We still have the rambling going on in our brain. So what will happen, trying to think of like someone that has not tried to meditate. What will happen when you sit down for those 2 minutes, or make it 5 minutes if you can, is that your thoughts will run wild. It's really difficult. A meditation master, they'll be able to. I find the feeling is almost like you're on a you're riding a wave. You're on a surfboard. If you manage to have your mind free from this constant spam that's going on. What I would recommend, I'm very interested in hearing what you would recommend for a beginner. I would recommend that you just count your breath up to 10 and then you start over again. And that gives you a barometer of exactly how wild your mind is. Because if you're anything like me, I could not come to 10 before my mind hijacks me on a different train of thought.
Crazy,
I cannot come to 10.
Imagine.
Yeah. So just try to do that for 5 minutes every day. And there will come a time when you can reach 10 breaths before you totally interrupted. And when you interrupted, don't be hard on yourself. You haven't failed. It's not about exactly. success or you so. You just fail. Observe mm-hmm. how wild your mind is, how wild yeah. the beast is. And then I tried to interpret. You said it's important to meditate in order to do what you desire or to break free. And I interpret that, correct me if I'm wrong, is many people are held back into an office job, something they don't like, because they're afraid of something, mm-hmm. that something will happen, something terrible, if they stop going to that yeah. office. And that's why they keep on doing it. They see some form of catastrophe happening. And hopefully if you meditate, you get the awareness and clarity of what is really important.
Exactly. Totally, yeah. Totally. And yeah, and what you say, I mean, exactly. When you start meditating, it will, your mind will go crazy. It will tell you everything from why am I doing this? This is stupid. Why I just yeah, shoot yeah. that podcast and I try it now and it's so stupid. What should it?
Fuck, it's unpleasant to sit like that.
Exactly. And, but that's totally normal. I mean,
that fucking email from yesterday.
Exactly. And I mean, imagine I met. I remember a master in Cambodia. He told me he also was meditating a lot, and he said, "Don't you think it's worth thinking about that most of the people have a problem to sit on a chair in an empty room and be with themselves for 10 minutes?
That's fucked up, dude.
And most of the people cannot do it. I mean, it's just 10 minutes with yourself. What does it mean when you cannot? You cannot be with yourself 10 minutes.
Something really flawed. Something,
yeah, definitely. I mean, and this kind of convinced me, because that's why it sticked in my head. And I said, yeah, true. Why is that? And
what's your answer? Why is that?
Because we're not aware. We're like, we're being played by our minds. Our minds is our thoughts. I mean, this is one of the greatest tools that evolution has ever, one of the greatest tools of evolution is the human mind. But it's a tool, and we have to play with the tool, and we cannot be played by the tool because this is what's happening all the time. This is like like a king who is a. How we say this, like who cannot decide by himself. There's no. That's why the Zen Buddhists they say boss mode. You need to be in a boss mode, which means that you see what your thoughts are doing, and if they're suggesting something, you can say yeah, maybe we do it, but you can't. You always have the chance to say no. Yeah. I want to have the choice. To be able to use your mind and not being used by it, and I think if you don't meditate, you cannot get this difference, because most of the people, it's the whole world is just the thoughts.
So, would you recommend that a listener that's interested in this, that they just sit down on their own, or is there an app, or would you recommend to visit some guided, or what should they do?
What you said is a very good advice, I think, that you just sit down and you count your breath till 10. You start small and don't expect something of yourself. It's not about performance.
That's super good advice, dude.
And it's like you're walking through the fog, and you don't recognize that you're getting wet. It takes a time. You cannot, because we are trained on, we want to see the performance of something. I buy this, or I do this, and I want to see
gratification.
Exactly. And it's gonna take a while, but when it's coming and when it's influencing your life, then meditation is such a powerful tool. I think it's the most powerful tool that you can have in your life, because everything we have is our mind, right? Everything. Like from everything we see, everything we hear, everything we think is in our mind.
It's true. So, man, I need to start meditating a bit more again. Yeah, I'm really bad now. I just do 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it's good.
It's better than nothing. Yeah. It's, I do definitely. That at Zen. I went to Zen retreat, and the master, whatever you want to call him, he then told me the difference between 0 minutes and 5 minutes, it's much greater than the difference between 5 minutes and an hour.
Yeah.
You get so definitely. Much benefits that's from exactly. those 5 minutes.
True. Totally.
As long as you step out of your crazy, wild, spammy mind exactly. for 5 minutes every day.
Exactly.
Every day.
That's the thing. Every day is more important, even yeah. 2 minutes, 5 minutes, because yeah, it yeah. remembers you.
That's it like remembers. A muscle, right? Yeah, exactly. If you do 10 push-ups exactly. a day, you'll be it's much exactly, stronger yeah. than with 0 push-ups. Yeah. Much, much stronger. Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with being esoteric or something. It's just, it's like, a, as you said, it's like a muscle. And I would even, if you ask me, it should be a, like a, in school, they should teach
totally.
It to children.
Totally. But I'm cynical about school. I don't think school is built to like really help you too much. No. It's built to train you to be a good employee, mm-hmm. to go and do the shit that you're told, yeah. mainly.
Yeah.
It's not... Yeah. The ROI is not directly there to teach the masses how to meditate yeah. or to be aware.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting a little bit conspiracy theory, yeah. but I think like, put yourself in the shoes of that you like run the country, that you're a ruler. Do you want the people to be like mega aware? Like if you need yeah. people to like go to the army, you need yeah. people to go to the factory. They shouldn't be too aware. Then they might not want to go to the army then.
Of course, why?
Yeah, exactly.
And why work all day?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah. I totally agree. But still, I think in the future for our kids, it will be the only chance to actually survive, because there's so many major problems. And if we're not getting more aware of our destructive minds, we're gonna just kill each other. I mean,
are you okay to talk about plant medicine?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Sure.
So we've only met once before, and that was we did the plant medicine ceremony. Very like had a wonderful day together. Cool. So I know that like we're probably having similar thoughts around that, and I think it's connected to meditation.
Yeah, totally. It's 100%.
And I think that it could be something much, much larger than just like, oh, it's a drug or you get high or something like that. Mm. It's it might sound dramatic, but I think it's like something that society, that humanity needs.
Yeah.
We need it now. Because
yeah.
it's too much to ask of everybody. Sit down, even for 5 minutes,
yeah.
it's too much
yeah.
to ask. Yeah. How would you get all of Germany to sit down yeah. and meditate for 5 minutes a day? It's almost impossible. Yeah. I don't know what you would have to do. But we need like a medicine, I think,
yeah.
in order to like provide instantly
yeah.
a different point of view, to get like shaken out of this ocean yeah. of whatever you want to call it, capitalism or
definitely.
So. And that's like, if I would describe a psychedelic experience, is that you... Or like I've heard it described. So if you think of meditating, like hiking up a mountain, mm-hmm. a psychedelics is like taking the helicopter up
yeah.
to the mountain.
Yeah.
And like you can just get
yeah.
to try it out. Like what is it like to be
yeah.
there?
Yeah. Totally.
And that, you know, in like propaganda, like don't do psychedelics. It might change you forever. You might not be the same.
Yeah.
It's true. But... Yeah, I think you can be this, not be the same in a positive way, because
yeah.
you have seen, like,
yeah.
hey,
yeah.
there's some, like, in my first experiences, I was really, like, surprised, like, what kind of thoughts am I thinking?
Absolutely.
Like, one thought that came up was, like, oh, it's really important to think about what is important,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah,
but it's simple, but it is fucking
yeah.
important, because
yeah.
otherwise you might like you live your life
yeah.
and you do just unimportant
yeah.
shit,
totally.
and that's like the meditation also gives you time out. Like, wait a second,
yeah,
100%. Am I walking in the right direction right now?
100%. And I think what we were talking before, when you stop meditating, in the beginning, it's just about really doing it and kind of pushing through. And when you have a psychedelic experience, it's much easier to see what we were just talking about, that thoughts are just phenomena in our mind, which, and they don't have something to do with us. They just appear. For me, it was obvious. The first time, like really, really obvious, I could see that the fear and the thoughts and the emotions that I have, that they kind of appear and they're there and I can be with them without having a problem, and they just go. And as you said, I think for many people that are not willing or don't have the, also they cannot manage the time to actually meditate and sit every day, this might be a good, or that they cannot see the importance of sitting every day, this can be a very good entrance or like initial, you know, spark to actually meditate. And what you said, what you were asking before, there's an app that I can really recommend. It's called Waking Up, from Sam Harris. And he's a really legit spiritual teacher. He meditates of the 70s. He's a monk. He has like a, like, it's not one of the new age spiritual teachers, but he was practicing meditation in Tibet, and he kind of dedicated his whole life to all these topics. And this guy, he's amazing, man. He's kind of, it feels like he's kind of a teacher for me, because I listen every day to stuff that he says.
What was it called?
Sam Harris is his name.
And the app is
Waking Up.
Okay.
And there is many people, and really, I mean, these are wise persons and wise people, and they talk about psychedelics and how they help humanity and how they help your meditation practice. And that it's kind of a propaganda, definitely, that people say it's just a drug. And of course, you can misuse it, like everything.
You can, yes,
of course. Like everything.
Yeah,
like,
do you have respect for it?
Even sports. You can misuse sport and you end up with
work,
with a
bag. Can abuse.
Work, everything. You know, so, but I'm totally with you.
I think that the first wave of really demonizing psychedelics was in connection to the Vietnam War. That then they saw, oh, like, shit, like, here's this thing, and that makes people, they don't want to go to the war.
They want to go surfing.
In a big scale. I watched the documentary about the Vietnam War, like a 10-part series, really fascinating. And it was huge, that force of people that protested against, we don't find it right to fight this war, and hell no, we're not going.
Yeah.
That's like, that must be really worrying. Yeah. Or it must have been very worrying for Nixon to view that. Like, how can we get these people to stop thinking like that?
Yeah. It's, sure.
And I think the first psychedelic wave was definitely had a part.
Yeah, the first wave was in the 70s, right? In the
60s.
60s, 70s, during the Vietnam War,
That was that was a problem for him. Definitely. Right? It was him that started the war on drugs. Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence.
No.
No. But it's coming back now. But how far do you think it will go?
That's a good question. I mean, I know a lot of people, and I mean, they have families, they have jobs, they're like integrated.
Yeah.
And like kind of, average people that start taking psychedelics and say, this is such a important thing for me, and even, I mean, for me, And yesterday I was talking with a friend of mine about it. He also said for our parents, because sometimes when we get older, there's many problems that are not being solved. And if you're not meditate, they're getting kind of bigger and bigger. And you get kind of stuck. And I think for this, it would be perfect.
It's therapy. Here's another thing that another thought that also came out of my experiences with it. I believe that language is flawed. Mm-hmm. Words, you can reach a lot with words, but you can't reach everything with them.
No.
It's not how change goes through. Like the example, like a smoker, you can tell a smoker, it's bad to smoke, it's bad for your health, you shouldn't do it. And he hears it, but he doesn't feel it.
Exactly.
And or alcoholism or so. It reminds me, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, he tried LSD and he was blown away by it. And he wanted to integrate it into the 12-step program that you should do a trip. And I think it would be beneficial because it helps you also step out of the normal mind. You view yourself a bit from the outside. What am I doing? And it's been described that many people then truly feel like, that's fucked up that I'm poisoning myself. Yeah. They feel it.
Exactly. They see it.
It's different when you feel it rather than when you hear it.
Yeah.
So
definitely. Yeah, the problem is with words is it's kind of it's like a pointer. It can be a pointer. Also with spiritual texts. There's
sure.
so many. It's kind of a pointer, but you have to...
They're limited.
Yeah, they are limited, definitely.
And I find when you have a good meditation practice, I went to two Zen retreats and you just meditate all day long. You don't say anything.
Exactly. You don't have to, right?
Then it's a liberation when words stop being in your head. Mm-hmm. You reach this point where you just perceive. Yes, without the voice, the constant voice going on in your brain.
Yeah.
And I believe everybody have, like, there's this state of bliss that is above all those words, all this chatter that's going on in your brain. I meditate a lot with an app called Headspace in the beginning.
Yeah,
it's guided meditation, and then the dude described it as the blue sky is always there above the clouds. And so when you meditate enough, all the clouds, all the words are gone, and it's just blissful. Mm-hmm. Equally as when you're in a psychedelic state, you're just there.
Exactly.
It's beautiful to just hang out together. Like we just sat on the lawn together, just observed what's going on, having a good time.
It was so cool.
You just sit down and you listen to a whole album with your friends. Like when does that happen? That you take the time to just listen to a whole album and just be there and experience it.
And it's
normally, unfortunately, we perceive ourselves too busy.
Yeah.
Like I don't have time to do that.
But then
it's a shame.
What you said, what is important in life, right?
Yeah.
What is important in life? And these are the best moments. I mean, this was a really nice day, I remember.
Yeah.
Also saw a lot of animals.
Yeah.
But we also.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. So if you look into the future, do you have something that you would describe, like, what do you long for? What's your next episode in life looking like? What do you hope for?
I would love to utilize my skills to actually bring or to help people to show people how important it is what we were just talking about, like. Meditation.
Yeah,
this is really
important.
We were just talking about it. You've been. I don't know. You can cut it off if you don't like me to say. But you've been in Uganda.
Yeah.
And you with people and trying to, to be yeah, to help people and to be with people and to make people happy. And I think this is the most important thing. And I my next episode would be that I put out as much of my ego that I can and just use my skills to help people to I think this is it. Actually, this is the core of what I'm doing. That I realize for myself how important it is to be aware and to be thankful for what we have, for our life, for every moment, and how. And but still, it's not that I'm a saint. I still have days where I totally get into all patterns and everything.
For sure,
I'm super fucked up. Really,
sure.
But I also have. I have days where I can really enjoy life, and everything is so nice. And it's mostly not when I have like a very special event or something. It's like you with here sitting in a park and talking, and I enjoy it so much. And I think it's a skill that everybody could learn, and that makes our world a better place. This is actually as simple as it sounds, but this would be my next episode. Find a way to.
I think you can have a really strong and good impact there, because I think there's not enough male role models also. Mm. In this field, there's more, but I think there's a large. Can it be a larger portion of men? I don't know if the gender thing helps maybe, me, but maybe, I know at least, and I think a lot of dudes would be like mindfulness, tofu totally. Bullshit, you know?
Of course. Definitely.
So I find it interesting this borderland of you have some macho qualities, you know how to punch someone in the face, but you also bring in the spirituality. Mm-hmm. That's maybe also what goes a long time back with martial arts, that it combines these two.
I know exactly these what two you worlds. Mean. I was that's a very good. Approach to that, but because I also think, for example, when I work with kids or with teenagers, I have a very good leverage with martial arts, because they always think when you tell them, okay, try to touch me, try to hit me, and they have respect right away, and then you have an opening, and then I can talk to them about meditation and stuff that they would really normally never listen to.
Yeah,
because you're absolutely totally right. So
are you teaching kids?
Sometimes I always had to teach the kids when I was training in Stuttgart with my master.
Yeah,
and back then it was always hard, because
it was a chore in the beginning for your.
Pardon?
Was it like a pain? Like
exactly.
Yeah.
Because kids, they don't have a long. Like attention span, and you always have to. But now I enjoy it more, and I have a daughter now too, and I definitely enjoy it more. But to be honest, I like to work with teenagers. I have the best connection,
right?
Because they really want to go for it.
Yeah,
and
they're very malleable still.
Yeah, exactly.
So. If someone is listening and they have a teenager that they want to see, do you have classes right now? How can they?
Right now, I'm only give personal trainings, because I have so much other things to do.
Yeah.
But I will, and I do some retreats and workshops, and I teach in universities, but it's always like, just a few days.
Yeah.
But I don't have a class that's running through, because, when I do films, I cannot plan so good. Right now it's very hard for me to do training every Tuesday, because sometimes I'm gone for 2 months.
Right.
But definitely everybody. I'm always glad to help. For example, to find something for kids,
or on a like personal training basis, I'm definitely I'm also very glad to train with people. I mean, I always first I meet the people, and mm-hmm. if we have a good connection, then yeah.
But is there a way, like how can people get in touch or follow you?
Right now, actually, I get rid of social media.
Yeah, exactly. We talk shit about social media. Sometimes it's useful.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I will do it in the future, because I just came back from shooting like 2 months, and there's going to be a movie that I also have to. Or that I want to support with the social media, so I have to find a way for myself. Not how I gonna do it, because I don't want to look every day on.
It's really difficult.
I find a way to maybe just do it one day in a week, and the other days I don't touch it, because I have been in a state where I was watching all the time.
Yeah,
I was
good. There's some very clever people there that yes. just try to figure out how to keep you hooked as long as possible.
Exactly.
I've tried like black and white screen on the phone. I've tried deinstalling Instagram. Instagram mm-hmm. is like my crack. Yeah. Like I find it very. Yeah, exactly. But now I'm like really deeply into it again.
Yeah.
Install it again. It's like an addiction.
But it's
what healthy. Also makes it so difficult is that it does have positive sides.
Definitely.
And it helps you, like in this project, if I want to like get the word out, and it's a very easy way to publish and to reach people, and it's wonderful like that.
Yeah. Definitely.
But it does have the dark sides too. So.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, let's do it like that. I'm gonna be on social media again. But if someone is interested, maybe goes over you till I'm back there.
Sure.
Is that cool?
That is absolutely cool. Yes. Yeah. I can be the mediator. Do you have a homepage? No.
Not yet.
No. Okay.
I would actually, but this is also something that I'm. That I'm working on. I mean, I'm on IMDb, and you can find like I have a lot of platforms for film, but this is not. This is more B2B and for agents or productions that
they're
searching for. So I'm gonna work on that.
Okay. Good.
Cool.
No, it's been a lovely conversation with you.
Damn, thank you.
Oh, I want to ask you one final thing.
Yes.
Who would you recommend that I contact for further conversations? Who would be a good guest?
Do you have people from?
I keep it very broad on purpose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the vibe that we have today.
That's cool.
That's it.
That's cool.
I define it as, you know, I find it interesting to talk with people that have made this kind of, that have liberated their minds and maybe their activities also. That's what I find interesting right now. Those are the kind of people that I would want to talk to more.
You know, probably you have already had him in your podcast is Danny.
Yeah, I've had it.
Well, good. What's up, man?
Of course.
This is
he lives right next door, of course. And I might have him again.
Exactly. She's a colleague. She's an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Maria Potthoff, a German actress that is doing martial arts. In German TV, and she started very, very late, but she really is so much into it, and she's such a nice person, and she's actually writing a book now about martial arts and film, and I think she's a very special person. She could fit.
Nice.
That would be cool.
You work together?
We actually train together.
Okay.
And next year we're gonna have a film together.
Oh, that's lovely.
She would be cool.
I'll check her out for sure.
Yeah. But if I let me think a little bit, and I will write to you if someone because I really enjoyed this, and I mean, you were such an interesting, wonderful human being.
Oh, thank you. I can just send that vibe back to you.
And I don't want to give you a bad recommendation. You think, hey man, who is that? Yeah. So let me think of it and
sure.
Come back to you.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, this was super.
Vitor.